We're going to be in Genesis 30. Oh, it says 29 at the top. Get confused when I don't keep my chapters even. But we're going to be in 30, 25, and then we're going to go a little bit into chapter 31. Just a reminder of kind of our overview of the message of Genesis. This whole book is just about God choosing to bless a particular people so that his blessing can spread through the whole world and overcome the curse. And today we're going to see how that blessing has been spreading to Laban, and how Jacob is experiencing the blessing and trying to kind of walk in it. This is kind of a strange story. I'll give you an overview of it, and we're going to kind of jump around in it because it's so weird. I think it might be helpful for us instead of just going kind of through it verse by verse, especially because of how it repeats itself twice. I'm just going to focus on different characters as we go through it. So I'll give you the overview of this story first in case it's new to you or it's been a while since you've heard it. At the beginning of this, Jacob is finally going to decide that he's done with his exile. He's going to return to the promised land and go back to his father's house. It seems both he's making this decision and God appears to him in a dream and tells him, go back. So he's going to walk in faith, return there. But his father-in-law Laban doesn't want to let him go. Just like Laban didn't want to let the servant go when he came to get Rebekah's hand in marriage. He's going to kind of fight and there will be a back and forth. And the main reason Laban doesn't want Jacob to go is because Laban realizes he's been very blessed by Jacob's presence and that God has been blessing him just because Jacob is hanging around, as God promised that he would do through Abraham. And so then they kind of negotiate and make a deal, and Jacob and Laban work out where, okay, Jacob can leave. And he's going to get to leave with not all of the stuff that he has gotten and has worked for and has contributed to Laban's household. But any new sheep that are born that are spotted or striped or marked weird, which would be a more rare thing, those will get to be Jacob's. And all the rest of the regular sheep are going to be Laban's. So they decide they're going to do this. And then Jacob goes through this weird ritual where he's tearing apart sticks and laying them in front of sheep that are strong while they're out at the river getting ready to make babies, and then more striped sheep are born, and then he leaves. That's our story. So what's going on here? I don't think this weird story is about sheep husbandry, and how to properly get the kind of sheep that you want. I think God is doing something in the story, and I really think part of the theme of these kind of two chapters here is all about kind of human responsibility and God's sovereignty and how those play together, how God is in total control of Jacob's story and in Jacob's situation and what was going on with him and Laban, and also Jacob is working finally in being faithful and being obedient to what God has called him to do. So it's kind of the overview of the story. So as we look at it, I first want to kind of talk about the enemy's work or what Laban is doing here. So Jacob wants to go home, right? And so as soon as Rachel is born, Joseph's born the last of these kids, and Jacob says to Laban in 25, send me away that I may go to my own home and my country. Give me my wives and my children from whom I have served you that I may go, for you know the service that I have given to you. So he's asking to get to go back, right? Which is the right thing to do, especially because he heard this in his dream where he saw God in 31:11. The angel of the Lord says to him, Jacob, and he says, yes, here am I. And he says, you know, I am the God of Bethel in 13. And then he tells him to go out of this land, return to the land of your kindred. So he's walking in obedience. He wants to obey God, but Laban is trying to stop him. Laban is trying to keep him. And what we see is Laban says in 27, if I've found favor in your sight, I've learned by divination. Doesn't tell us exactly what kind of divination Laban is doing. He's doing some kind of magical scene. Maybe he's casting dice or seeing a necromancer or a medium to figure out, wow, why am I being blessed so much? And which is also funny, then this divination that Laban has used tells him that God, Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and now Jacob is the reason that he is being so blessed. And so Laban really doesn't want to let him go, although he says, yo, name your wages and I'll give it to you. That should sound familiar. That's what he said to Jacob when Jacob first got there. And Jacob said, hey, you know, I'm here, I'm willing, you know, to work. And Laban says, okay, well, just name your wages and I'll give it to you. He says, well, okay, I want to marry your daughter after 7 years. And then he does it, and then he gets the wrong daughter. So he's, you know, Jacob has learned a little bit. You know, he's not going to be fooled again. He realizes, and I think we're supposed to realize too, Laban is not being honest here. He's already getting ready to try and deceive him. And we see, you know, the last time he asked him for wages, he wanted to change it. And we find out later in 31:7 that this isn't the only times. There's actually 10 other times that Laban has changed what Jacob said he was going to be working for. Because, okay, those happened. Then they've had a bunch of kids. There's been a lot of years since then. So what has Jacob been working for? Well, apparently that keeps changing. You say, well, okay, I'll work, how about for 10 sheep this year? And then, oh, nope, it's actually only one sheep. Okay, well, how about this time it'll be this? And Laban keeps changing all the rules. It's happened 10 different times. So then when they go through and, you know, Jacob makes his deal saying, hey, let's do these sheep. And Laban says, okay, that sounds great. And then Jacob says, I'll go through and I'll make sure, you know, I get all those spotted sheep out so we can, you know, separate them and we'll know there's no trick stuff going on. And 35, it says, but that day, Laban goes through himself and removes all the male goats that are striped and spotted and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted and everyone that had white on it and every lamb that was black and put them in charge of his sons. And then he sets a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob and Jacob's pasture and the rest of Laban's flock. So Laban says, great, good deal. And before Jacob can get there to figure out which part of the sheep are his, Laban liquidizes his assets and gives them to his son, other sons and then sends them far away. And then he moves even further away from Jacob. Oh, well, okay, you're going to have to walk 3 days just to see if any of these sheep are yours and then walk back. So he's opposing Jacob. He's trying to make this kind of as hard as possible. And later, even when Jacob succeeds anyway, Laban and his sons are angry. And they say in 31:1, well, Jacob's taken all that was our father's, and from all that is our father's, he has gained so much wealth. They're complaining. They're calling him a thief. As if Jacob's been the one who's stolen anything from Laban. And as if Laban hasn't been incredibly blessed by all that Jacob has done and just his presence. So even after, when God continues to show up, Laban and his sons are still, they're still just trying to oppose him and trying to fight him. We find out later in 31:7 too, not only has Laban, you know, changed his wages 10 times, but God lets Jacob know that God has not permitted Laban to harm Jacob, which tells us Laban's wanted to harm Jacob. His sons have wanted to harm Jacob. And if it wasn't for God and his restraining influence, or however it is that God is doing this, they probably would have. Whether that be kill him or just beat him up and take his stuff again. But God has held this back. So this is the opposition and kind of the stage setting that's happening to Jacob here. And, you know, we might not face this kind of opposition about sheep. I don't know, maybe Sydney's not here. You know, maybe some of you do a lot of stuff with cattle and face this kind of problem. But, you know, we all do face opposition from people. We may face opposition from people in our work, people that we rub shoulders with, people who claim to be your friends. We might face opposition from the world, or we all definitely face opposition from the enemy, from the devil and from his demons and their work in the world. And so the question that we have is, as we're facing this opposition, is how are we going to respond to it? What will we do? And so we'll see what Jacob does and kind of his work. So Jacob, again, he asks for a reasonable claim. At first, he just asks, okay, I don't even need anything. Just let me, my wife, and my kids, and we'll leave. But Laban doesn't want that to happen. It seems as if Jacob is like an indentured servant or a slave to Laban. And he's asking for his freedom. And so then when he does ask for the sheep, you know, he makes an incredibly reasonable request. We might wonder, why is he asking, you know, for the spotted or the striped sheep? Well, first, it's because God told him to do that. In chapter 31, we learn that later. But he's asking for sheep that are rarer, that are more uncommon for him to have. And so he's really, when Laban hears it, he's kind of like, oh, that's what you want? Yeah, sure, I'll make that deal because you're going to get nothing. That means all the best sheep are going to be for me, and I'm going to get most of them. And it seems here that Jacob is really making an incredible transformation. He's been tricking, he's been deceiving, he's been kind of doing things his own way, but here he is willing to be honest. And he wants everything to be above board and to be transparent. So when Jacob says it, you know, you don't need to give me anything. If you'll do this for me, you know, I'll pasture your flock and I'll keep it. Just let me plaster the flock today and I'll remove all the speckled and spotted sheep and the black lamb and the spotted and the speckled and the goats, and just they will be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come to look into my wages with you. So he's saying, let's get all those sheep that are speckled and spotted out. You can start with zero of them and you'll be able to tell every time there's a new one. You won't be able to say like, oh, wow, I came and I took more than I should have had, or that I've cheated you in any way. It will be obvious and open and transparent, and no one can argue with it, that these are mine. So he's willing to risk this at great kind of personal cost to himself. And we see, you know, Jacob, he goes to work to do this. You know, there's 3 days between him and Laban, and yet Jacob is making this journey rather often. He's going back and forth. It seems at least that he's going back and forth. I don't think that he's just going there, but it gives us this very strange thing. We'll finally get here, and I'll try to explain what I think this means. It says, and Jacob, in 37, chapter 30, Jacob takes fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees, and he peels white streaks on them, exposing the white of the sticks. And he sets the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink, since they bred when they came to drink. And the flocks that bred in front of the sticks, and so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks towards the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban, and he put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. So they're born, he puts these sticks down, some of the lambs come out and they're speckled and spotted, so he takes those for himself, the ones that aren't, gives them to Laban. And then whenever the stronger of the flocks are breeding, you know, the good sheep, Jacob would lay these sticks in front of them before the eyes of the flock so they might breed among them. But for the feebler of the flock, he doesn't lay down the sticks. So the weak sheep are Laban's and the better ones are Jacob's. And thus the man increased greatly, his large flocks, female servants, male servants, camels, and donkeys. What are we to do with that? No one wants to shout out their idea or if you had it figured out. That's okay. I had to look it up and figure this out too. Because it almost seems like Jacob is like working some kind of weird black magic, as if these sticks are like going to make the sheep be born differently or affect their environment. You know, there's different interpretations. The church fathers, they often, you know, as they try to wrestle with this and explain it, try to interpret it spiritually. Okay, there's three things here. It's got to be referencing the Trinity and the waters here. So water is always about baptism. So maybe that's what this is. It's just foreshadowing Jesus and other stuff, because otherwise it seems like Jacob's just doing weird magic. Secular scholars will tell you, no, that is what he's doing. He's, you know, doing old ancient rituals, trying to conjure these kind of sheep up. I think, and this isn't my original idea, I'm getting this from Abraham Kuruvilla, who's a scholar that I really like. He argues that what's going on here is there's some Hebrew wordplay that's taking place with these. And he even kind of says, well, Jacob isn't working black magic. He's actually working white magic. Because Laban, his name is white. So it's kind of, everything here is a kind of a play on white. And so what's happening here really, and part of what you need to understand about Hebrew is that Hebrew is weird. I'm not great at Hebrew. Okay, I got bad grades in Hebrew just to put my cards on the table. And one of the reasons I really struggle with Hebrew is that every word in Hebrew really is three consonants. Every word, every single one of them just starts with three consonants, and then it can be 17 different words, depending on what vowels you put on it. Three consonants, so like, you know, B, you know, not vowels, B, C, D. So you put B, C, D together, and that could be 30 different words. If I put an O at the beginning and an A, or two O's, and that's a totally different word, or then an O on the top, or then an L. And they just do little vowel markings. And the original didn't have it either because people just knew what the vowels were. So what's interesting, what Hebrew does with that, is since words are so similar, because they will have the same three consonants, there's lots of poetry that will happen with them, or irony, as it uses kind of those same three consonants for a different word. And so it doesn't always translate into English. But so part of what's happening here is, you know, Jacob, he exposes the white flock, which is similar to Laban's name, to those consonants there, to these Rob's to these rods of the poplar. I wonder, well, what is that? Well, it uses those same three consonants of Laban's name again, the Libna. And then Jacob peels white, again, uses Laban's name, strips into it. And so it's this kind of using Laban's name three different times. So he's in front of Laban, the white sheep, putting the white things of white Laban's flock. And instead of that, what actually comes out is sheep that are striped, which is a code, and speckled, which is not code. And then Laban gets the Laban sheep. And so the striped and speckled is very similar to Jacob's name. It sounds like Jacob. This is the best idea I got. If you got a better one, you're welcome to it, and you can chase that interpretation. But I think that's probably what is going on here, is there's just some wordplay, is that the sheep are kind of literally and figuratively being transformed from Laban's white sheep into Jacob's sheep, because the speckled and the spotted sound similar to Jacob's name. It's the best explanation I got. Because I really don't think Jacob is the main one making any of this stuff happen. And what we see here primarily, if we can leave that for a second, is that Jacob really does seem to have changed. He is committed to obeying God. He's not trying to steal Laban's sheep. He's not dressing up and pretending to be Laban. He's not deceiving in any way. He's doing everything out in the open. He wants to return to the promised land because that's what God has commanded. And he's asking for these sheep because that's what God commanded him and told him the kind of sheep that he was going to have. And so, you know, I do think this is just one of Jacob's best moments, that he is humbly trusting God, even as Laban is opposing him kind of over and over and over again. And he's doing the best that he can to try and follow God as he's doing this stuff with the sticks. We even see, strangely here, he seems to be, you know, submitting and asking Rachel and Leah. He's telling them about his dream. He's telling them about God's command and what God has blessed him and what God is doing, and says, hey, God is calling. You know, I think God wants us to go back to the promised land. Do you want to go? He asks. I mean, that's nice. He didn't really seem to ask them if they wanted to get married last time. Didn't have a lot of input last week, as there was all this back and forth of these pregnancy battles. But here, he seems to be much better. He's asking them as Isaac's, or Abraham's servant did as well, to Rebekah, do you want to go? Do you want to go to the promised land? Do you want to come? And she responds, and yes. And so he asks, and his Rachel and Leah both answered, well, you know, is there any portion or inheritance in our father's house? We're treated like foreigners. He sold us. He's taken all of our money and all the wealth that God has taken from him. It belongs to us and our children. So whatever God has said to you to do, let's do. So they get to have a vote too. They want to go back to the promised land as well. So I think that's admirable and important. And so, you know, this again kind of goes to that same question I asked before, you know, what do we do, or we can be tempted to respond to the opposition that we face when we are opposed, like Jacob is with Laban. Our most immediate temptation usually is to fight back or to try and, you know, get down in the mud too, to sin, to do whatever we need to do so that we can win, so that we can overcome, so that our side can have victory. Or we can be tempted to rely on our own power to overcome, like Jacob has been throughout his story, of relying on his own ideas and his own deceptions in order to gain God's blessing. Or on the other, you know, totally opposite side, which is Jacob's never been tempted by this, we could be tempted to just do nothing and expect, well, God's in control, so he'll take care of everything, so I'll just sit here and not do anything at all and hope he takes care of it. And what we should do, I think, is, you know, we should just be faithful as Jacob is here. And we do our part, however small and ultimately meaningless and silly it might even seem, from God's perspective. And then we trust that God will do the rest, which is what I think Jacob does. And then God's work. God is as in control of the wombs of the sheep as he is in the wombs of the women last week. God is the one who is controlling whether or not these sheep are born with stripes or spots or with nothing. And he chooses to let the strong and the best sheep be born of these and to be born to Jacob, because God has been blessing Jacob. He's been blessing him so much that even Laban, who doesn't like him and who is abusing him and taking advantage of him, sees and recognizes that God has been blessing him. And then chapter 31, you know, it kind of repeats it again. Now it lets us see it through God's perspective. The first part of chapter 30, I think, is just from like the human, everyday, monotonous ordinary experience, and then 31 we get to see, oh, God is actually really present here. God has actually commanded this. God has been working through this, and God is doing something. And God is the one who's been blessing Jacob. God is the one who's calling him to return to the promised land. And, you know, in 43, especially when we see the man increases greatly, has large flocks, female servants, male servants, camels, and donkeys. That exact phrase, that exact verse, you can find it copy-pasted to describe how God has blessed Isaac. You can find it almost copy-pasted how God has blessed Abraham. And now God is doing the same to bless Jacob. And God will do it again to bless Joseph and then many more as well. But so it's just continuing that the blessing that God promised is being experienced now. And God has been working to protect Jacob, to protect him from Laban's schemes and all of his attempts to harm him. And really what is going on here is not Jacob doing something mystical or magical with sheep, but God doing something. And so kind of part of the application there is, you know, I think that we need to be willing and trust God even when his work seems imperceptible to us. To trust that he is at work, to trust that he is doing something even if we don't see it, even if we feel like we're the ones doing all the hard work. To trust and know, no, God is working here. It's kind of our work or our applicational thoughts here. You know, there's very natural tension over how do we as human beings have responsibility to act and to obey God and to live in a righteous, moral, God-honoring life, and God is in control of everyone and everything, or God is in control of the world. How does that work out? We see some of that work out here, I think, in this chapter. And my contention is, you know, we're called to be faithful and we're called to be obedient to God in every single circumstance we find ourselves in. And while we do that, we acknowledge, well, God's in control of this circumstance, whether it's one that I'm happy that I'm experiencing or it's one that I am not happy at all that I'm experiencing, or whether it's one that makes me wonder if there is a God at all because, excuse me, this circumstance is so terrible that we do both and we have to just live in the tension, that we try to be faithful and we rest and are encouraged by God's faith. And, you know, the Bible encourages us, as it encouraged Jacob here, to be faithful, to obey him and to be faithful because we can trust God, because we can trust that he is good. Jacob should be faithful because God has said, I will bless you and I will keep you and I'm going to help you return. So Jacob should be living as if he can trust God and trust that he's in control, even as he doesn't know what's going to happen here. And I think that applies to us as well, that we should trust God and trust that he is still with us and trust his promises. You know, the Bible also warns us, you know, encourages us in the opposite way, that we need to be faithful because we will be responsible for our actions. That all of us one day, as we talked on Sunday, will have to stand before the throne of God and be judged. And so because you will have to be held responsible for what you do, you should live as if what you do really does matter, because it does. Whether or not it's going to change your circumstance or affect everything else, it's going to affect what happens when you stand before Jesus after your death or after Jesus returns. So my view, or I guess how I kind of work these things out, is I don't think that thinking about God's sovereignty and human responsibility, I don't think it should give us like anxiety or give us tension or make us like our brains hurt as we try to figure it out. Really, ultimately, my hope and my prayer is that it should encourage us. And it should encourage us to be faithful. To be faithful in the moment and in today and whatever it is that we're facing. It shouldn't, you know, make us worry or make us think, I've got to make this happen. I've got to figure this out. I have to do the exact right thing and then everything can get better. Well, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'm going to try to be obedient and be faithful. I might not be successful, but I'm going to be faithful and I'm going to trust that God can handle the rest. That's what I think Jacob does here, and that's the part of what he does that we should emulate. Okay, I'll stop there. Any questions? Anything I can clarify here about sticks, free will, and God's sovereignty? Don't ask me sheep husbandry questions. I don't have anything. I'll refer you to Sue or someone else. Yeah, you can ask a question about last week. We'll see if I remember.
It says they're made and then fall to the water.
Yes.
But now it's going for the reference, and they have reference to bruises coming up in chapter 35.
Yes.
But they did not marry, did they marry them in the same sense that they did Rachel and Leah? They did not, did they?
I don't know for Jacob. Later on, it's a little more defined, somewhat. There definitely seem to be like lower class wives, but they still belong to the man. Correct. So it's, you know, it's a promotion, kind of. You know, instead of just sex slave, you're, you know, fancy sex slave. So, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, it's not great. I should stop, so I'll stop. That's a good question. Yeah, I'll just stop and pray. Yeah, we should. Lord, I thank you. I thank you that you are in control. And there is so much about you that is incomprehensible to us. And even there's so much in your word that really is incomprehensible to us. That is a beautiful pool that toddlers can come and swim in and have a great time. And it's also something that we can never find the end of. That even if we study it our whole lives, we will continue to be amazed by it. There will continue to be things that we can't fully answer and can't figure out. And there will continue to be things that make us fall more in love with you as they blow our minds. And I just pray that you would help us to never get over you, to never get over your word, and that you would help our hearts to not grow cold to the beauty and to the wonder of it. We pray this in your holy and precious name. Amen. Thanks for being here tonight.